Good evening, Poppets, and welcome to this week's serving of Naked Football. Tonight I'm joined in the studio by our resident pundit, Phil Ham.
Hello.
And we welcome two Naked Virgins this week. First, a guy who contributes to both TWTD and When Saturday Comes, and he is Gavin Barber.
Hello.
And finally, we welcome a Sweden-based blue in the shape of Steve Myers.
Hello there. Well, hey, if any people are watching.
God, we can't have any more of these people. We had the Dane last week.
That's right. We can understand that one too, right?
I think we have to, though. It's not like the BBC's have
equal
coverage of parties in a general election, and we'll have some kind of Scandinavian...
Okay, right. We have to talk about last Saturday's game against Colster, unfortunately.
Do we?
No, actually we don't, but we ought to. Obviously, we'll have a look at tonight's game against our FA Cup final opponents, Cardiff City. And, of course, we'll have the small matter of a derby against our web-fingered friends from across the border. So, all that and anything else you would like to bring up, which assumes that there's anyone out there, I'd fully expect most of you to be preparing for the game in the pub. If you are...
Leave the players out of this ground.
Feel free to text whilst they're driving on the way
to
the ground.
Yes, feel free to text from the pub if you're listening, which you will be. So, if you are about, the usual address is studio@icrfm.co.uk, or you can text, as I said, on 0797385198. Phil, do you want to start on the Colchester debacle?
Well, it was pretty poor, really. I mean, I think the main thing we got out of it was that we just can't score goals at the moment. And I was sort of looking back at the record since Christmas, and I think we've scored... we've only scored two goals in a game five times in the 19 games since Christmas, which is just not anything like playoff or promotion form. And we all knew in January that the main areas we wanted covered were a new striker, a kind of Franny Jeffers-esque, David Johnson-esque goal-getter, and a centre-half, and we didn't do either. And I think, you know, Jim clearly recognised this because he went after... Andy Gray, who went from Burnley to Crystal Palace, to Charlton. And then again... When the last deadline came up, he went after David Healy and David Nugent and whoever else. So
what went wrong at Colchester? I mean, I don't get to see these things firsthand.
We had a lot of the ball, and I think, you know, we do generally have a lot of the ball in most games, but we just lack any quality in and around the box. And I'm not just talking about Alan Lee and Danny Haynes, who are the strikers, but anyone. There weren't quality balls put into the box, and we just didn't seem to... I mean, I don't think Lee played particularly well. I don't think Haynes played particularly well. But they weren't the only problem. It's just we seem to pass the ball quite happily into one area. But not as soon as it gets into an area where we should be dangerous, we're not at all. I mean, the fact that Colchester kept a clean sheet against us, having only kept one previously, and I think that was a Preston, when Preston
at the start of the season
were awful at the beginning of the season.
I listened to the games. I listened to the games in Sweden over the telephone. I ring up my mum and she puts the telephone in for the radio, and I listened to Radio Suffolk. What I was going to say was, it didn't sound as though the midfield was performing either against Colchester, according to the commentary, anyway.
Well, we had the ball. I mean, I think that was the problem. We controlled the game for large parts, and I mean, you know, the fact they scored their two goals really with probably two of their three chances up to the stage at the end where the game was clearly already lost. But just lack of quality. There's just nothing really going forward in the area and around the area.
I think we miss Pablo hugely.
Yeah.
I think more than people realise, he's been out for two games and we've scored in neither of them. And even when he's not on top of his game, as he hasn't been since maybe just before Christmas, he still causes huge amounts of problems. Defenders have to watch him. Even if he's not at the top of his game, he's so tricky, he's so clever, he will distract at least two or three defenders if he's anywhere near the ball. And when he's out of the side, we'll miss him a lot.
Laya Road is always going to be a difficult ground for ball playing teams, isn't it? It's not an easy place to play,
especially when they knock it down at the end of the season.
Well, yeah,
that's even more if anything.
But I mean, I don't think the problem... I mean, Pablo obviously has been a loss, and John Walters has been a loss, but I think it goes back further than that. I mean, you look last year, that period, I think in January and February, we didn't score a goal in the entire month, and I think January we probably scored once or twice. It just goes back to as long as that. And I think Lee is probably a decent enough striker, as long as he's got someone next to him who's going to score 20 goals. Pablo's probably the same in a way, although it's difficult to, unless we get someone, I don't know, I'm trying to think of somebody in that kind of, a Niall Quinn type figure, who's the big man who also gets quite a lot of goals.
Yeah.
I think we're going to find it difficult to what sort of striker would you see us looking at?
I thought Healy would have been a great signing for us. I think he's a clever player, arguably quite similar to Pablo in some ways, but for a short, not the biggest. He's a great header of the ball. He's got a bit of pace about him. He's obviously. I know this is the one fact that everybody knows about David Healy, but he did score a hat trick against Spain.
Yeah.
Spain may or may not have been at their best, but you have to be pretty good to score a hat trick against Spain.
There's that other guy at Burnley, beginning with L, Northern Ireland.
Flaherty.
Flaherty, yeah.
He looks pretty handy, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big fella, isn't he? Rather than a sort of short guy to go alongside a big guy, he is the big fella. They're playing in midfield, aren't they, Burnley?
They've played in wide, certainly, perhaps similar to how we moved to Chum. What was that wide at the start of the season? I mean, Lee and Pablo at the start of the season. I know they sent the teams a long time ago and I looked absolutely fantastic at home. I hadn't played that much away together, but I mean they seemed to instantly strike up an understanding that Pablo always knew where Lee was and was putting the ball in the right place for him to run onto, and whether defences just got wise to it or not, I don't know, but we certainly have lacked that creativity.
Well, I mean, Lee scored very few goals. I mean, again, as last season, I think he scored a load of goals early on, both last season and this season, and then has gone through a very sort of low period between about October and now. I just think that we're going to probably have to bring somebody else in
to cover
that period of the season when he doesn't score.
And he did do the same last season, which is when we brought Franny Jeffers on loan. I think the team hadn't scored in 6 hours or something ridiculous until we brought Jeffers in. And Lee, you know, perhaps it's unfair, he's the only sort of out and out striker that we have really, and it's unfair to put too much of a burden
on it. It's always going to happen, isn't it? I mean, all the teams have been very erratic in the Championship this season, so
it's unfortunate. I mean, given that everyone has been so erratic, if we'd have got a decent run going, it could have been our year, and it's now starting to look as if we're not going to make it. Do you think we're going to make the top six?
I'm a bit of a pessimist, and to be my head says no, my heart says yes.
Yeah, what about you, Gavin?
If anything, the other way around. I think it might be our curse to stumble into the top six. Other than generating interest and excitement, I'm not convinced it would be. We can be great this season. We've seen that. We can be absolutely fantastic. But we can also lose to Colchester.
When
losing to Colchester didn't come as a surprise to me, and probably not a lot of other Town fans either, because it's the sort of thing we do. And if that's where we are, then we need at least another season at this level.
Mm.
I don't see that, you know, getting in the playoffs.
I think the playoffs is terrible, but it's great fun. It's terrible for the nerves.
I think that if we don't reach the playoffs this season, then this season has to be seen as a failure, because I think that's what we
were on course, weren't we? Really?
Well, on course, but also it's what was being targeted by the management at the beginning of the season.
On the other hand, we've clearly moved on since last season. I mean, there has been progress. We're a better team now than we were 12 months ago. And, you know, I generally speaking like what McGeown is doing with the club and think that he's moving us in the right direction.
I agree. I'm a huge fan of Jim. But perhaps one of the problems is that we've been... the team just hasn't been that consistent. There's been a lot of chopping and changing with the selection, I suppose, because we're trying to get some kind of team together, a consistent team. And I just wonder if that has been part of the problem, that there's been too many changes.
Well, I think early on they kept it the same, didn't they?
And then we did quite well.
We were doing quite well. And I mean, I'm trying to remember back whether it was kind of enforced changes or whether... I mean, I think selections were changed because we were doing so badly away.
And they were just
trying to find a method of getting us a victory away from home, and it perhaps took away from the team that had settled at home.
If I recall correctly, the tinkering started on the left side of midfield, because we did have a settled team, particularly at home at the start of the campaign, and it had Gary Roberts on the left of midfield, and we were playing really, really well at home, but Roberts was the one player who was looking like he wasn't quite up to it. Then we messed around with Billy Clark on the left-hand side of midfield, and Haynes came in a bit, and then by Christmas we were sort of looking at John Walters on the left of midfield and Gavin Williams sort of flitting in and out occasionally.
Jim asked me to go, actually.
I'm surprised you're not playing. But it was kind of, you know, it was that tinkering on the left-hand side of midfield that sort of led to the whole But like that episode of Father Ted where they have a tiny little dent in a car and, yes, and they, yes, just sort of tap away at it. I think I can get this, and then by the end it's
Billy Clark doing pretty well on the...
I agree with you on the Billy Clark point, but very much so. I thought that of the players who had played left midfield up to when Alan Quinn came in, really, I think that he did well, although... Perhaps, although he still looked a bit of a fish out of water.
But he seemed to be growing in the role, I thought, at the time.
Yeah, and he was very unlucky not to score, and that probably would have made a big difference. Just going back to the Colchester game, if I can, I'm just wondering what you guys think about Essex referee Andy Durso taking charge of a local derby. I'm not saying it would have affected the result. Taking charge of a local derby match in Essex, featuring Essex side Colchester United in a high-profile game against their local rivals. Does that strike anyone as slightly odd?
Well,
I think Andy Durso strikes me as slightly odd.
More than slightly.
How often does it happen in other parts of the country? I don't really know. I mean, obviously, we've got very few other teams in this particular area, but in Lancashire, say, I don't know, Wigan are playing, Crewe, from Cheshire. Does a Mancunian official get appointed? I don't really know.
Well, what you certainly wouldn't get is a Mancunian official taking charge of, say, Manchester United against Liverpool, or even Manchester City against Everton. No, and it does sound like a stupid thing. On the other hand, there are, as you say, for few teams in this part of the world, so it does look odd, and it seems to me, grand conspiracy theory ahoy, that it says something about the way that provincial clubs are regarded and the importance of provincial clubs and their local rivalries are regarded in the way these decisions are made, whether it's to do with fixtures, whether it's planning of fixtures, whether it's to do with refereeing decisions or what, somehow it's not regarded as an important thing, yet it was Colchester's most important game of the season.
I mean, it might just be that whoever appointed the referee didn't realise that there was any rivalry between Colchester and Ipswich.
Well, exactly so, yeah.
I would guess that most people around the country would think that, Ipswich Colchester, okay, it's reasonably local, but I don't think it was a derby, really.
Well, no.
I remember going to a Colchester match with you once many years ago.
Indeed.
Supporting Colchester.
I think many of
Colchester fans have been. I was at the 71 Leeds match, and I was supporting Colchester in that match.
I agree. Colchester fans may have a different view. I don't know. The other reason that it might have arisen is that somebody might have thought Andy Durso is so bad that he's incapable of favouring one team over the other.
Whenever
I've seen a referee,
in one game he was so bad, I hoped he was actually taking a bribe because he was so bad, but it was just...
We're assured by our lawyers, purely incompetent.
Anything from...
Absolutely none, Phil. I told you we wouldn't have anything coming on the emails. I'll read out there. What I would say, though, is that there's been no email on this computer since 1344, which is the middle of the afternoon.
I didn't know they'd invented computers.
So, if you have been trying to email in, there could be something wrong with the computer as well, so they may not all be in the pub. Anyway, we go on to, as you say, one from our friend Raimondo Slegg. Will not be getting to the playoffs be regarded as failure by Marcus Evans, and as a consequence is the manager's job under threat? Could the panel please discuss? Off you go, panel.
Well, it's been said that Jim's job isn't under threat until maybe Christmas next year. I don't know. I would guess that's probably true. I think he's going to be given at least half a season next season to see how things go.
That is certainly the noises that Derek Bowden and others have been making. And, of course, we have no reason to disbelieve it. On the other hand, that's what club officials always say. And things can change very quickly. I did see a few weeks ago Jim doing a bit of punditry on Sky on their Big League weekend show. And the presenter in that sort of gushy, annoying way that he has was talking, talking up Ipswich and its wonderful reputation for loyalty towards managers and saying, aren't you lucky, Jim? And I have to, maybe I was reading too much into it, but he did seem somewhat equivocal in his responses. Things like, yes, I hope so. I hope it turns out that way. Which kind of may, as I say, maybe I was overanalyzing, but it did suggest to me that he wasn't as certain of his position as we would have expected him to be from the noises that were made around the Marcus Evans takeover.
But I mean, I think the thing since the takeover has, every time they talk about their approach to getting promoted in the Premier League, they always look at it and say it's a 2-year thing, the first year presumably being this year, with the possibility of playoffs, because I think, we've never kind of been sat there squarely in fourth place, ahead of anybody, and no one else has, but so it's only ever been kind of a possibility. We've not looked like promotion certainties at any stage. So any planning that they've done ahead with the signings of five players in January and looking at players in since then, has presumably been done with a view to next season as well. And although we've fallen away somewhat in the last few weeks, I don't think Marcus Evans will be looking at things in that kind of short-term way. You know, that we've done badly for a month or so, and so we need to kind of change the manager in the summer. The plan is perhaps, you know, if it gets to November and we're 17th, then I think we might have a look at things. But at the moment, he's just spent a load of money in January, a third of the... was it a third? I think was the phrase that Brad used in the interview. A third of the $12 million on players to strengthen the squad, and it doesn't seem like good planning ahead to start the same manager a few weeks later.
Jim did identify the areas that he wanted to strengthen. He seemed to be very clear about what he wanted. It's just that he didn't manage to get.
Well, that is it. Yeah.
So maybe over the summer things will be sorted out.
Also, you would have thought Marcus Evans is obviously very successful in business. And it remaining secret from the rest of the
world.
He's very good at hiding. When are we going to tell them that he lives in just under this table? Sorry, I'm not supposed to say that. It's very good to keep him quiet. But he would have looked at the business, in this case being football, and seen that chopping and changing managers is usually not a way to guarantee success. It only needs to look at any Newcastle or countless number of any other clubs to show that, you know, actually a bit of stability usually pays off in the end. Certainly worth a try. So I would have thought, I agree.
I think the whole thing applies throughout, and team selection as well. I think the whole stability is key word, actually.
Yeah, good thing.
So Sweden then, we talk about players for the summer. Recommend names of players from the Swedish league.
Traditionally, I think young Swedish players probably who are looking to come out into a bigger club don't seem to choose England. I think it's too big a step. Probably they're not going to go walk straight into a Premier League team if they're a young player in Sweden. What they actually often do is they go to Holland, Dutch clubs. If you think about, let's say, the four big people who've come out of Sweden that I can think of recently would be Henrik Larsson, who went via Feyenoord, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who went via Ajax, Marcus Rosenberg, same again there, via Holland, and Fredrik Ljungberg was the only one who actually came direct to England. So there are some good young players about. There's a couple in Malmö where I live, a guy called Behrang Safari, who can play anywhere really, up the left hand side. He's already on the fringes of the national squad. He's obviously going to be a pretty good player. And there's another young guy called Guillermo Mullins, who is of Uruguayan extraction, but he's a Swede, who looks pretty handy. He's a kind of midfield player. Other than that, I don't know, really. There's that guy who we were supposed to be chasing at one point a while back, Jonas Olsson, who was already
the mad centre-half.
I checked this out with my caretaker at work, who's a Landskrona fan. He was originally from Landskrona, this guy. And he said, he's tough, but he's fair.
I think just after right towards the end of the transfer window, I kind of looked at the Dutch side. But who was he playing for in Holland?
I can't remember.
Heerenveen.
It might have been Heerenveen.
Something like that. And he'd been sent off the previous week for stamping on somebody's head. I'm not sure
what what's happened to the game, man. You can't do anything.
I think he got a four-match ban or something for that, just before the end of the transfer window. So
I didn't get the impression from my caretaker at work that he was deliberately aggressive in that way.
He got
somebody headbutted his foot.
And it's quite an interesting thing. We were looking at centre halves and we were looking at strikers, and they were the areas that are the areas that we're still lacking in, aren't they, really?
They are.
But it's coming to Sweden. Sorry, the discussion the other night on Radio 5 about the way that Premier League clubs are recruiting very young players from European countries for their academies. Is that affecting Sweden at all? Are you aware?
I don't know that it is. As I said, I don't know of any young players who have... Well, I mean, there must be some. I mean, I don't follow Swedish football that closely, but there must be one or two who have come over directly to England. But as I say, I think most of them usually look to Holland or similar, because they feel that they'll get a chance quicker.
Well, this is what the Danish guy, Finn, who was in last week, was saying, that a lot of them go to Holland and Germany first. Do you find that the people... I mean, I went over to Sweden 2 or 3 years ago, one of the pre-season tours, and I was asking some of the Swedish town fans who they supported in the Swedish league, and they said, oh, we're not interested, we're only watching English football. Now, is that quite common? And is that seen as a bad thing in Swedish football, that there seems to be...
Traditionally, certainly, it was English football was what people watched and saw, because it all began, I don't know, 30 years ago when they started showing a live match on a Saturday afternoon. I think Wolves was the first match they showed, so there were a lot of Wolves fans.
Is it something about Wolves and Sunderland, something like that? I remember a friend of mine telling me, a Danish guy telling me, there's a disproportionately large number of Sunderland and Wolves fans in those countries.
But since then, I think young Swedes have branched out a bit, and I'm not so sure that there's a lot of interest in English football, but there's a lot of interest in Italian football, partly because Latin is over there. It's still very big.
I think I also heard that thing on Radio 5, and I may be wrong, Stephen, tell me if I am, but I would have thought that because Sweden enjoys a very high standard of living, you're less likely to be tempting young players over to other clubs with the promise of big bucks in the way that you might find that, you might more easily do with Portuguese or even Spanish youngsters who could, whose heads could easily be turned by the pound signs.
Having said that, I think, the turnover of one Premier League club in a week probably represents the whole of Swedish football for a year. There's a huge difference in the financial side of things.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is that a lot of these Premiership clubs can now basically offer so much money to youngsters at 17 that their parents can retire. with them. Wherever you live in Europe is going to have some.
We used to have a scam, didn't we? More based over in
Simon Hunt.
Yeah. Because I actually wrote to Ipswich once in my younger naive days when Andreas Isaksson. The goalkeeper who went. He came from a little place called Trelleborg. And I saw him when he was about 16, 17. And then they said, oh yes, I wrote to Ipswich and said, oh yes, we're aware of him, we've got our eyes on him already at that time. Nothing came of it, but I don't think we've got that representation.
No, yet. I mean, all that kind of wider scouting set up when we relegated him, went into administration. I mean, Simon Hunt now, I think, is a coach at West Brom, I think.
I think so, yeah. Have we got any scouts in Ireland?
It's a scandal, really.
What the Swedish team, a lot of the Swedish teams are doing, they go over to South America and they scout a lot of South Americans, not maybe the top rate Premier League level, but just under that level. And there are a lot of people in Swedish teams who they've...
Presumably on Portuguese passports or whatever.
I guess. I don't know exactly how it works, but I just wonder if there might be some way for clubs like Ipswich to tap into, because I think there's a lot of talent out there.
Maybe Maurizio Tirico could scout for us.
If I think he's in Sardinia or somewhere, I think...
Talking of South America, does anyone know anyone called Sophie? Just as a matter of interest?
No.
Okay. She just asked if we're all okay. So we're okay. So thanks anyway.
Very nice.
South America.
No, it has nothing to do with it at all. It went a bit surreal for a strange moment.
I've been poked on Facebook before.
I've got one. This one came to me earlier. Kevin Pond from Chorley. I presume that's the Chorley in Lancashire. I believe Jim needs a massive clear out in the summer. Who do you guys reckon should go? Well, I think we've sort of done this before, haven't we? A bit, but quite a lot, I would imagine.
I think there are too many midfielders. Most people would agree with that. Too many midfielders at the club at the moment. And Gary Roberts is somebody that's fairly obvious.
I don't like talking about who should go.
I like talking.
It seems a bit disloyal to me.
Yeah, plus it'll go on forever, won't it, if we start.
No, but you're right. Definitely right. I think Gary Roberts was brought in at a time when the financial situation at the club is very different than it is now, and I don't think he's proved himself. Gavin Williams is in a difficult situation because he's always injured. We're not going to be able to kind of... I don't think you can trust him to play 25 games a season, let alone 46 games in a season.
No. The pity is, though, that a player like Liam Trotter is not maybe going to get the chance that he possibly deserved, because there are too many people before him. Because I mean, I thought he did really well against, what was it, Portsmouth? He was sent off.
Yeah, so he got sent off.
And did he play against West Brom? I can't remember.
Yeah, he played against
West Brom, I thought.
Was there when he played on the left against
West Brom? Yeah, he played two games.
Another player who played on the left.
I think he'll probably get more of a chance next year, but I can see he's still, I don't know exactly how old he is, but I know that he was in the youth cup team with Danny Haynes and people, but I think he was a year younger than that.
That's what I mean by stability. I just wonder if we hadn't brought in as many people, if we'd maybe stuck with what we got a little bit more and tried to develop people like Clark and Trotter a bit more, if we'd be in really a very different position to what we are now.
I would add to that list, and it's not an irredeemable situation, Shane Tappel.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we should, you know, if he's not playing for Falkirk, I don't know what arrangement we've got with him.
We can't bring them back.
Well, arguably we shouldn't have sent him in the first
place.
It's easy to be wise in hindsight.
Well, that must have been a mistake or something.
I think they went with the view that he would play, but the Austrian goalkeeper up there has, I think, kept 6 clean sheets in 10 games since he was up there. So if you're John Hughes, the manager of Falkirk, you're going to think, well, I'm not going to drop my own player because while he's playing this well, and so you can understand that in a way, but then from Town's perspective, having Shane Supple sitting up there in Scotland is completely pointless.
It is.
Particularly when I don't think Stephen Bywater's covered himself in glory.
I would agree that he hasn't. I think he's been disappointing, and it seems to me that this summer is either the time when Supple becomes our first choice or moves on permanently. I mean,
I think it would be a great pity.
I would love to see. I think he should start next season in goal for Ipswich.
Yeah, I agree with that. Actually.
I would much rather that than us going back to Richard Wright. You know,
or another sort of experience.
Yeah, I
he's never. I don't think I can't remember Supple ever letting us down. Can you?
No, he makes
the odd mistake, which goalkeeper doesn't. But I think he's no less reliable than some of the others we've had, and arguably showed himself.
Can only get better.
Yeah, I would say so.
So Cardiff in about what?
No, not Cardiff. Yeah, well, Cardiff and that lot up the road, because we won't be talking till before that. So you've got two quick predictions, Gavin. Go.
Tonight, a scrappy 2-1 win, to winner to go in off Alan Lee's arse. Sunday. Good job you told me that. I'd have turned up a day early. I'd like to be optimistic. 3-1 to us.
Well, I think Cardiff 2-1. I would agree with Gavin there, even though I'm a bit of a pessimist. And Norwich, I don't know. God, 3-0 to the Town.
Yeah, that's a pessimist view.
That's a pessimist view.
I think Cardiff will be one of these teams that they'll be cup final happy, and I think they'll sort of
just like when we played Barnsley.
Yeah, I was going to say very much like we played Barnsley. I think we'll probably win 3-0 quite comfortably. They've got a relatively small score. They have Norwich on Sunday. I reckon a tricky one, but I reckon we'll come out 2-1 winners.
That's not a bombshell, is it?
No, on that prediction, then,
thanks, Gav, thanks, Steve,
thank you.
Phil. Till next week, thanks for not emailing in and for being in the pub. We're going to join you now. So till next week, have a good one. Bye.